Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it is now or never. And as I now remind you that when you look at that national debt, when you understand the enumerated powers delegated to the federal government, and you're looking at the national debt, all of that debt is unconstitutional. The way they've been spending it and what they've been spending it on, and as a matter of fact, I actually went through the 2023 budget, and well over half of the revenues that have been brought in have actually not been properly spent. In other words, if you look at the legitimate outlays that the federal government spends based on its budget, less than half is constitutional. The rest of it is all unconstitutional. So the question is, do we really have a 16th Amendment problem? This goes back to the whole point that the 16th, there's so many different, there are problems with the 16th Amendment, the way it's being enforced and so forth. But the reason they went to the 16th Amendment was to be able to basically get into corporations, because at that point in time, there's no doubt as we look, hindsight being 2020, as we look at why corporations were the focus for the federal government to basically be able to pull the regulation away from the states and then allow them to become global corporations to allow a new class of monarchs to exist in this new world, in their new world order. And so anyway, bottom line, we the people and the government of the United States do not owe that money. Now, all of those corporations, General Motors and all these global, these big, huge conglomerates of corporations, there is no constitutionality for them to be operating outside America. So here's the question. What ends up happening to, let's just say you have an ideological corporation. Forgive me for going down the rat hole. But if you have an ideological corporation that says, we will pull out of America and no longer do business with America, well, at that point in time, there's no reason why those assets don't become seized by the state. In other words, let's say Hewlett-Packard or let's say Ford. All of the Ford motor plants and everything else would then go into a conservatorship, and every Ford product that the international Ford conglomerate wants to produce doesn't necessarily have to come back into America. We can actually, if you really think about it, we can dismantle, we can cut the strings that these corporate globalists have created. We can cut them just like that. And even though there would be paradigm shifts and a little bit of austerity, I am telling you folks, the austerity we face by taking back our constitutional rights and actually taking back our government, or placing our government back into the framework of the Constitution, all of our governments, our businesses, corporations, all of that, and undoing all of these unconstitutional regulations, we will be far better off. The austerity, in contrast to being placed under their thumb, is a much better deal. A much better deal. Because once we go under their thumb, there is no removing that thumb. None. No chance whatsoever. Forgive me. Anyway, before I return into political exorcism and start focusing back on Kurt Lash's dissertation, or his third part three of his thesis, let me cover a few things. And actually, let's just call it marketing, because that's what I used to call this on my Friday shows, along with Feedback Friday. And I do have some feedback to cover as well before I get into the Kurt Lash article. I think that there's merit in talking about some of the, let's just call it, marketing. Now, you probably heard just recently the House Republicans passed a bill to stop the Federal Reserve from issuing CBDC, which is the digital currency. This national digital currency, which will be actually forged into this world digital currency. When we finally get off of the dollar and get shifted, what will end up happening is that there will be this leveling. And what you believe you'll get a penny for a penny or a dollar for a dollar in exchange when we go into that digital currency, you're going to be lucky to get pennies on the dollar. And this has a lot to do with some of these other things. This is one of the reasons why a long time ago they started going after gold and silver and trying to make it illegal for you to own, for you to possess and own. And don't believe me? They actually went after gold and they seized the citizens' gold in the past. FDR did that. You know, everybody's favored president, as the progressives look and laud him as one of the best next to Biden and Obama. Bottom line, they will come back. I mean, history repeats itself and government acts in the same ways consistently, and it typically becomes tyrannical, which is why we were given a system that couldn't get there. As long as we kept them in their position within the framework that they were granted to have. In other words, this is what you get, federal government. Don't go beyond that. The problem is the states were the ones that actually colluded by taking their money and allowing them to drift and drift and drift. Now, just to be clear, you know, even though you kind of agree to say, okay, we're going to let you do that, that doesn't mean that it's legitimate. And at any point in time, the states can say, you know what, we kind of regret doing this. Unfortunately, you didn't do it right, so we can now force you to actually do things right and stop doing these things that you really shouldn't have been doing, even though we did nothing to stop you until now. Because that's how it is when it comes to a compact. That's how it is when we deal with the fundamentals of contract law. Now, the next thing is, this is kind of interesting because I've talked to you about this shift, this paradigm shift of the world. And it's starting to happen because, and most people, I know that there's a lot of people that look at what Israel is today is not Israel. And I'm not going to argue, but the fact of the matter is the sentiments of what we call Israel today, whether they be the real Israel or not, what we call the Israel today, since it became the nation that it is, not that, you know, it's the legitimate full Israel, because remember, even the tribe of Judah is only 1/12 of Israel, right? There were 12 tribes. So Israel right now, because it's only Jews, is only 1/12 of Israel. But nevertheless, let's get to where we are in these paradigms. And I'm here to tell you that the paradigms that we're dealing with are reeking of biblical connotations as the world starts actually going, hey, you know, we hate Israel, and I say this because the UN court has ordered Israel, the UN court. Now, who is the UN? This UN is this made-up, mock-believe, legitimate global governing body. Now, I'm not sure if Israel's actually formally accepted and created a treaty or is aligned with the UN. I would really doubt that. But bottom line, here is the international body telling them to cease and desist in what they're doing. In other words, they're starting to take sides. But is that the only thing? No. So what's actually happening is, and this is getting reported on, that anti-Israel international boycotts are boycotting American and any form of industry out there. In other words, people are actually going through and they're starting to let everybody know, hey, if you eat at McDonald's, if you eat out of the Yummy brands, or KFC is another one, or any of these companies that are not taking a pro-Palestine position, it's got to be pro-Palestine. In other words, it's about anti-Israel. And that, so they're going to start forcing their, well, they're going to start spending their money and forcing these corporations that have not taken positions, or have actually taken positions that they don't like because they're supporting Israel, then they're going to use economic warfare against them. This boycott concept. Now, that's democracy. That is a form of democracy. Right, wrong, or indifferent, you know, you have the ability and the freedom to actually execute those things that you want to do. So as we kind of look at what's going on in the world, this is an indication or an indictment that it seems like the world's sentiments towards Israel is starting to change. Now, is it 100% of the world, or is it a real majority of the world yet? Don't know, but biblically, the world will turn to the majority, to where they will hate Israel and support destroying the destruction of Israel. So how close are we to that war they call Armageddon? How close? I'll let you speculate. I think we're getting an inching closer and closer and closer. And there's a lot of people that aren't seeing, you know, the forest through the trees, or I should say the trees through the forest, or vice versa. Doesn't matter. Some people are, you know, way down into the details with their dates. They're not seeing the bigger picture. So it's really the forest through the trees. So anyway, Yellen has come out, and this is all perfect. This is absolutely perfect. Yellen has supported these policies of increasing inflation. And she's finally coming around and making a comment. Why would the Secretary of the Treasury, while she was the part of the Federal Reserve, as well as the Treasury, inflating the currency, why is it that she starts speaking concerns over the cost of living? Why? I'm telling you, folks, she's doing this to help start throwing fuel onto the fire. What ended up happening when the cost of living and the sentiments were acknowledged by government in Greece, Italy, Spain, and so forth, throughout the world and throughout history, it actually incites people. Bottom line, the Federal Reserve and the Treasury and the government, they've been manipulating and stealing our wealth, and inflation is one of the greatest taxations that a nation can place upon their citizens. And they're doing this. Just remember, I just told you, when you look at the budget, they're spending at breakneck speed. You know, people complain about the defense budget. It's not even $1 trillion. The defense budget is not even $1 trillion when there's over $4 trillion being spent out of the budget on unconstitutional things. Now, let's add this. The budget does not include this other unconstitutional omnibus spending that is just out there, like the Build Back Better crap. And if you didn't know, the federal government has no authority whatsoever to execute this thing called the Department of Transportation or infrastructure, or to spend $2.2 trillion on Build Back Better. If you look at the budget, they claim that they've only spent less than $150 billion on infrastructure. Well, then that means that the Build Back Better money is going somewhere else, or they're not showing it. And I'm telling you, they're not showing it. That's the truth. So here's the thing, because this one thing leads to another. So Yellen is talking about this cost of living is increasing, and this, you know, because of inflation, You know, I remember there was this Saturday night skit, and actually, yeah, it was talking about how everybody would, you know, because Cuba was inflating their currency at a certain point. And it was a skit that I think it was Castro. And Castro was basically saying, look what I've done. I've made it so that everybody can afford a $100 Cuban cigar in Cuba. Because the cost of cigars have gone up and they've inflated their currency to that point that, you know, the currency was hardly worth, you know, it was basically worthless. Just like in Germany. Remember, folks, it was cheaper to burn money than it was to buy wood. That's how bad it was. Now, the other little story that's in the news is that there are a record 401k millionaires. And it just is going up and up and up. Because as the value of money becomes worse and worse, even though the stock market may be rising, that you have $1 million in real 1960s dollars, that's probably maybe $25,000 instead of $1 million. Hyperinflation is a decimator. And when you look at the vast gaps between the millionaires and the billionaires, that gap is only getting wider and wider. And this goes to the conversation. I'm not here to be, you know, the king to say take their money. But this goes down the conversation of understanding when a person wields too much power, how those people should not be trusted. I would rather, it's kind of like when you look at OPEC and the power that they hold because they've maintained the necessity of the use of oil. Now, people are saying, oh, well, this EV, this electric, that's just crap. It's a designed, failed policy to get you to actually surrender a workable car and actually have, because if electricity goes away, then you're up, you know, you're up that creek, right? So when we look at what they're really trying to do, and with OPEC trying to maintain this control, I can tell you, if we switch to hydrogen, remember, this planet is over two-thirds covered with H2O. And there's such an abundance of hydrogen in the world that switching to hydrogen would be the way to go. But the problem is that they're changing our infrastructure to be incapable of delivering enough electricity. Anyway, that's another subject for another time. But the point is this, is that as we start looking at where we can go and what they're doing and how they're basically taking away your money, even though you feel like you're a millionaire, when really you're not, because they've inflated the currency so that everybody can become millionaires. This is no longer the upper class. The middle class is being elevated to millionaires, which means nothing. Now, in 1928, when this type of thing was happening, because this actually happened in 1928. Don't believe me? Go read about Joseph Kennedy. The reason why Joe Kennedy was able to survive the crash is because he got out. What he ended up doing, and what ended up happening, I believe his story goes like this, that he actually got onto an elevator and was going up, and, you know, he was a very powerful and very rich man at the time. And as he was going up the elevator, the elevator operator, because in those days, they just called him an elevator operator. There's another name for him. But anyway, this elevator operator opened up his stock portfolio and showed Mr. Kennedy how rich he was. And Mr. Kennedy, when he got off the elevator, started pondering that if America is filled with millionaires, then something's going to happen quickly, because he knew that that was a setup. So he just said, you know what? I'm getting out. I'm going to get out now because there's way too many millionaires and something's going to happen. He didn't know. At that point in time, he wasn't even a part of it. But he did, and he was the one that basically said, when it comes to power, with money and affluence, it really shifts. Your desire to have more and more money shifts to your desire to have more and more control and power over people. When you actually start feeding the beast, that's what ends up happening. And so we're looking at the situation where everybody else feels like they're immune, like that bellhop, or the bellhop is at a hotel, the operator of the elevator, the carriage car going up and down. The fact is that when we have that many people that seem to be doing so well, that's when the rug gets pulled out from underneath them, because the whole stock market was staged. They did that so that they could transfer wealth. So more and more people were putting their money into it. And as it would seem like more and more was going, then instantly the stocks collapsed. What ended up happening? People actually started committing suicide. There were people that threw themselves out windows. Folks, don't buy into all as well. As a matter of fact, I'm going back to, we should actually be looking at, and I stopped doing this about a year ago, because after the Fed, and I kind of showed you how it was, you know, it wasn't, the increase of gold and silver wasn't immediate, and it never really is, because actually there was an immediate uptick. There was an immediate uptick in the market. But as things started settling down, everything did literally settle down to where the stock market, or I should say the value of gold and the value of silver, kind of stabilized, and it kind of came back down to reasonable levels. Now, that's when it was around $20-some for, you know, $22, $23 for silver. Go look at the silver now. It's pushing back and forth. It's over $30 now. And gold was about $19,000. It's over $2,300. These increases have been subtly happening as inflation is going up and as people are just, you know, they're going, wow, the stock market's great. You know, life isn't that bad for those people invested. I'm telling you, all the signs are there that we're going to be pushed into another bubble, or they're directly creating a collapse. And these collapses do not happen naturally, not anymore. These are all staged. They create the conditions. Something ends up happening because, you know, all they have to do is go into war. That will collapse the market just like that. They know that. All they have to do is do a particular stunt or a particular action, and it can cause a collapse. But I believe that the collapse will be even greater than what we think, and this digital currency will be the economic savior, just along with the mRNA viruses and the editing of your DNA was the savior to, you know, these new future viruses. You know, Bill Gates wants us to basically re-edit your DNA so that you'll no longer be susceptible to viruses. Isn't that great? A universal vaccination. That's what he's been calling for. And I'm telling you, folks, we're talking about one real evil man. Now, we get back to the news or the marketing as we kind of look at what's going on. Over in the Far East, we can see China's conducting a very short two-day, basically an operation or a military exercise, mocking missile strikes on Taiwan, basically testing their ability to seize power type of drills to punish Taiwan's president. And basically, this is trying to let them know, you want to be separatists? We're going to come after you. Folks, why are we not telling Taiwan that they should be petitioning to become a state in the Union? We'll be right back after this.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so if you think gas is expensive now, so I just kind of was wrapping up real quick to throw out this China, what they're doing, and this goes back to the constitutional solution to globalism, is that every state actually prepares and puts aside some of their cultural things. Now, we're not talking about changing their culture, but their currency, their laws, those types of things, if they're willing to actually be in a just system of liberty, then they need to change their laws. They need to stop allowing their government full power over them. And the only way to do that is to become a state in the United States, because there's no government, once they have power over you, unconstitutional power over you, they're not going to willingly give it up. I mean, there's no person that says, you know what, this arm is bad. It's kind of like there's the biblical scripture, if your eyes offend thee, you know, poke them out, right? Cut, if your hand offends thee, cut it off. There's, who will do that? I mean, it's more important to change our behavior than to actually harm ourselves. And so nobody willingly cuts their arm off. Nobody willingly does that. No tyrant willingly surrenders power. Never. They would rather go to war. And so the reality is this, is that if the only solution, when you think about it, the only way to end world war is for everybody to be functioning and operating with free market principles and liberty-based solutions, legal liberty-based solutions that come from the Constitution. And there's no reason why many of these nations can't come into this, other than the fact that some nations where the growth of Islam is occurring, well, Islam's not compatible. It's just not compatible. Communism is not compatible within the United States or underneath our Constitution. If you're a communist, you should not be a citizen. Oh, well, speaking of citizen, that actually lends to one other thing. But before I get into that in the news, here's the other good part. You think you're paying high gas prices now? OPEC is just now having a meeting, and they're looking at extending production cuts. Not only extending, but maybe deepening the production cuts. So what ended up happening when Biden took office, we already were seeing the effects of inflation. And sometimes inflation is subdued in a market where there's a high supply of stuff. Inflation is always subdued. The Obama and Bush administration was able to carry out a suppression of inflation for the food by throwing wheat into the commodities market out of the American food reserves. You know, we had these silos that was a part of the national, unconstitutional national reserves of grain. And Bush actually started taking that grain and putting it into the market so that people wouldn't realize that we weren't producing as much grain as we used to. And as they started suppressing the production of grain, and when they ran out of actually putting grain into the market, in other words, those silos went empty. They emptied our food reserves to pull off this sleight of hand that caused the Arab Spring. Because when all of a sudden Arabs can't feed themselves, then all of a sudden, voila, you now have revolutions. And that's exactly what happened. When people can't feed themselves, Aristotle even points to that. That's one of the primary reasons for a revolution, which actually grew the brotherhood and extremists throughout these Arab and Islamic states. So, folks, they're good at manipulating. They know what they're doing, and the master design has done this for millennia. So, with OPEC extending their production cuts, you can just plan on experiencing unreasonably high costs. Now, excuse me, if Trump gets reelected, obviously he's going to boost the production in America again and actually be able to increase the oil supplies here in America. So the people that are really going to be feeling the crunch is going to be throughout the world if Trump wins. Now, this goes into this new discovery that just recently a federal court in Florida ruled and basically sided with the Latino groups that said, barring lawful permanent residents, other non-citizens from registering voters violates constitutional equal protection rights. Now, this is a Chief Justice Judge Mark E. Walker, who determined last Friday that a provision in Florida's SB 7050 assessing a $50,000 fine for each non-citizen found to be, quote, collecting or handling voter registration applications violates the constitutional equal protection rights. The ban covered people with illegal permanent residency or green cards. Now, this idiot, this dolt, is making this claim that non-citizens have a right to be voters and to vote. And I'm here to tell you that when you actually start commingling that, you're actually allowing non-citizens to vote, you're basically violating the Constitution. So when you go into the four amendments, the right for blacks, or that race is no longer a factor in voting, and that would be what, the 16th Amendment, I'm guessing off the top of my head because I don't memorize stuff to that degree, but not the 16th Amendment. It's the 15th Amendment. I'm sorry, the 16th Amendment. I should have known that. Anyway, the right of citizens of the United States. Did you hear what that said? The right of citizens of the United States to vote shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of race, color, or previous condition of servitude. Does that mean that non-citizens can vote? No, it says the right of citizens. Only citizens have the right to vote regarding color, or at least regarding that amendment. Now, the 19th Amendment, I'm guessing again. Yeah, the 19th Amendment, the right of citizens of the United States to vote shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or any state on account of sex, not gender. Sex. So, when you go down to, and what was it? I want to say, was it the 21st? No, it wasn't the 21st. Was it the 27th? No. I'm sorry, the 23rd? No, that was not it. There it is, 24. This is 1964. Now, I'll go back through these, but the right of citizens of the United States to vote in any primary or other election for president or vice president, for electors or presidents or vice presidents, or for senator or representatives in Congress, in other words, federal elections, shall not be denied. So federal elections, this does not say anything about state elections, right? I'm going to read it again. The right of citizens of the United States to vote in any primary or other election for president or vice. So it's talking about the very specific offices. So that if you're going to participate in a federal election for president or for vice president, or, and interestingly enough, president or vice president, or for electors for president or vice president. Did you hear what I just said? The 24th Amendment actually includes this concept that states, were some states in 1964 still only doing electors? In other words, you may not have voted for the president. They may have actually placed it so that you had to vote for the elector and the electors. Were we actually using electors at that point in time? I don't think we were. But the fact is that they include that language is powerful, because bottom line, that's who we're supposed to be voting for. We're not supposed to be voting for the president or vice president. We're supposed to be voting for electors for president or vice president. But anyway, moving on, the next category for an election that is being protected for, or for senator or for representative in Congress, shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or any state by reason of failure to pay tax or poll tax, to pay any poll tax or other tax. My bad. Folks, can you require poll taxes for your governor? Yes. Can you? But you'd have to actually have that election in a non-federal election year. So in other words, the state can actually offset the state elections from the federal elections so that they no longer coincide. Well, now that may cost the state a little bit more money, but it actually could and would actually thin out those who would be voting, because it would still be left to U.S. citizens. But the fact is, the state could actually say, if you're not a landowner, you cannot vote on a bill that would apply tax upon land. If it doesn't affect you, you can't vote on that. If you don't have a dog, and I'm not really trying to make it so that there's a poll tax, but I'm telling you that they can create requirements so that you just don't have a right to vote in that election. Right now, full democracy, any U.S. citizen is able to vote. There's no barriers to entry other than, again, because it says the right of citizens of the United States. And so the final amendment is the 26th Amendment. I knew that. The right of citizens of the United States who are 18 years of age or older to vote shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of age. But there still is the requirement that you have to be a U.S. citizen. Never, never did it say that the right of any inhabitant on the face of the earth can vote in the United States, and that right shall not be denied. And this judge is basically making that assertion, that if you can make it here to America, whether you're on vacation or whether, you know, you're just here illegally, doesn't matter, you have a right to vote. They're literally throwing America under the bus. Now, what really bothers me the most is when you start hearing anybody, you need to read Petition 3, the invasion petition, because when we hear people talk about the illegal aliens in America today, most people are saying, well, maybe it's 5 or 10,000. I've heard conservative entertainers say this, and it just infuriates me, because what happened to that 2018 study that was done by the leftist educational vestiges, MIT and Yale? These two schools did a cooperative or a similar study where they kind of looked at the results together, and they kind of concluded in 2018, and, you know, It was published in 2018, so the survey had to have been done before then. So they had to, this, because, you know, you just don't do it in a week and then actually have the output in a week. It doesn't happen that fast. For you to go out throughout America and to determine how many illegals there are, because that's what they did. They did a study of what they thought, how many illegals were in America. Guess what? They came up to 21 million in 2018 when they published it. That's what they said the number was. But I believe that that number was actually indicative of a much earlier point in time. We already knew, and as a matter of fact, it was being reported by conservative entertainers during the Bush administration. Actually, it was right after the Bush administration, where the debates between McCain and Obama were talking about illegals, and they were saying that we were pushing close to 30 million at that point in time. Now what happened? All of a sudden it's only 21 million? Well, we do know that I think Obama did grant unconstitutionally, he didn't have the power to do it, but he granted citizenship to the Dreamers, right? And oh, that was so great. But folks, if he didn't have the power to do it, that citizenship was granted illegitimately. You want to piss some people off? Tell them that they're not really citizens, because they've been illegitimately granted citizenship. Why? Because the Constitution is very clear that there has to be a uniform standard of naturalization, right? It says right here, Article 1, Section 8, to establish a uniform rule of naturalization, period. You can't just arbitrarily say, we're gonna let this voter group right here, these Dreamers, because why? They were young kids, ideologues that were leftists, and we're going to grant them citizenship. In other words, that was a ploy to obtain more voters in a very specific election. Now, I don't know if there probably are hardcore ideologues, most of them, and they're probably all still hardcore leftists. I don't know. People do change, right? We know people change. I changed. Have you? Of course. So when they do those types of things like paying off or saying you don't owe money on your loan, all that is doing is it is encouraging you to vote. It's buying votes. And buying votes in America is illegal. We've passed laws against this. And how is it that people, incumbents in office, are never challenged by their challengers coming in to say, this guy shouldn't even be on the ticket because he supported buying the votes of these people, this class of people. Obama should never have been able to be reelected in doing that Dreamer Act. And I don't know if that was in his first term or second term, I don't remember. And I just say that because, you know, I'm getting of that age. I actually have to be looking at stuff nowadays because certain things, it's just, I can't forget some dates and times, but there's just so much. And I kind of talked about this in this past week. When you're doing interpretation, imagery interpretation, you're looking at assets and resources and so forth, and you're looking, let's say you're trying to identify aircraft. Nowadays, computers do it. But when a person had to do it, you got really good and accustomed to making, you know, that's a call, that's a, you know, that's a Bear H, right? That's a very specific model of a Bear aircraft. And so you can become very accustomed to doing that and say, yep, because that's all you do. But it's always better to confirm instead of just assuming that, you know, because it looks like one, but you didn't see the nub and say, well, that's got to be one because there's that many there or whatever. That's where mistakes are made. And that's why, you know, we had these guides or these, I'll just say, these outlines or interpretation guides that would actually help you verify the differences between the variants. You know, an antenna, a little nub, a little what have you on the aircraft would be the indicator, and you need to confirm those things to be accurate. See, the computer will do it because it doesn't make mistakes. It doesn't make assumptions. It doesn't see something that isn't there. and sometimes our minds can. So as I was in the education of new interpreters and so forth, I constantly told them that they needed to confirm what they were calling out, what they were doing. And because I myself got bit during the Desert Storm. Every single team that was in the Joint Intelligence Center, every single team, even mine and I, made the same mistake where we imposed the wrong coordinates, which threw everything off because of the convergence. There was a convergence, and I don't want to get into the details because most people don't understand mapping and geodesy and so forth. But anyway, there was this real troubling spot in Kuwait where there was a convergence between these two different map sectors. And so, bottom line, everybody failed to actually put it in the right zones, and, you know, thinking that, oh, what it did was it actually got all of the geo-coordinates off. And so, anyway, the long story short is I even made that same mistake. And so people do make mistakes because you have to cross your T's and dot your I's. Well, that's the same thing when it comes down to, you know, are we doing things in accordance to the Constitution? And to be clear, when we actually have, you know, our government leaders saying we're going to do something and it benefits you, even if it's unconstitutional, you have to stand up and say no. I've never seen a town, I've never seen a county, I've never seen a state stand up and say, federal government, don't throw us this money. You have no authority to do this. It's almost like cutting off your own arm. Nobody, only those within the impeccable integrity. So here's the problem. The mores of America have been decimated. We have no integrity. We're more than willing to allow ourselves to be bought off, and that's how it all started, because the states were being bought off. And, oh, okay, so we don't have these controls anymore. Well, that's okay. We got money in our pocket. Yay. Anyway, so let me get back to, you know, what we need to finish covering, because we kind of have killed this concept of allowing illegal voters, or I should say illegal aliens and people who are not U.S. citizens, the right to vote. I'll also ask you to look at Section 2 of the 14th Amendment. It is so embedded in this concept that only U.S. citizens, and by the way, that's why the 14th Amendment, its first clause, was focused in making blacks who were under, in America, who were under the jurisdiction, in other words, they were slaves. You could have had blacks that were visiting America, I would doubt it, at that point in time, because, well, actually, after the Civil War, I think that Africans would be interested in maybe vacationing or visiting or, you know, looking to migrate to America. Why not? After the Civil War. So would they have the ability to be citizens? No. They were not born here under the jurisdiction. That was the point of that citizenship clause in the very beginning of Section 1. Which actually equally implied to all types of people who were under the jurisdiction of the United States and they were born here and their parents were under the jurisdiction as well. They are U.S. citizens. Guess what? You can't apply it towards blacks and not apply it towards Indians. Indians are granted that citizenship. They're a citizen of their tribe if they consider their tribe a government. If they consider that. Now, you may be a member of the, you know, the Lutheran church down the street. When we read the scriptures, does it not say we are citizens of the gospel of Christ? Yes. So, in other words, in a way, there's a concept of citizenship towards our religious cultures. And most people don't see those types of things. But I don't see these constitutions and forms of government other than they're really more of, because is there not a form of religion and governing the religion itself, right? You have a priest, or you have a, you know, I forget in the tribal terms, but it's very similar. When you really look at, you know, government and governing, they're a lot different. And even though the church is there, is there tax in church? Yeah, there's called tithes, right? How is it that we have, you can call the, you know, a tribe member a dual citizen, but they're not a dual citizen of two nations. They're just citizens of a religion or culture and citizens of the United States. It's just like you're a citizen of the Catholic Church because you're a member, you're contributing, right? You're on their rolls. They consider you a part of their organization. And actually, a citizenship can be even looked at, or the phrase citizenship, as an employee. But when we talk about citizenship regarding nationality, in other words, the government of jurisdiction, if you're a member of a church, and as a matter of fact, this has actually happened before, and I don't, it was, and it's unfortunate that it only was applied and recognized towards the religious culture. I think of Alaskan tribe, whatever the, you know, the Inuits or indigenous people of Alaska, where some kid, some man committed murder, and they, the tribe pleaded to, you know, have the jurisdiction of punishing. And what they did was they banished that kid to living on an island for the rest of his life or whatever. And the courts actually allowed that. Churches actually do punish their members. And so why is it that in some cases, the are in common law, that's an acceptable practice? In common law, the churches can and had punished people. As a matter of fact, Alexis de Tocqueville's Democracy in America actually proves and points this out, because he points out how the reason why people were good in America and the government was great is because the churches were the ones that inflicted the punishment in the early 1800s upon their citizens. They didn't need government to create all of these laws to basically control the conduct of people. The religion of Christianity did that, and the churches governed that. Now you start to see how we actually did have and do use governing in different forms other than just a formal government. And we see governing within religions and in other, I'll just say, facets of our lives, corporations and so forth. Now, remember that as a U.S. citizen, you have inalienable rights, and your church nor your corporation can inflict upon you or take away or deny you or abridge your rights or privileges and immunities. Rights, privileges, and immunities, same, same. Now, I didn't get into Lash's comedy clause and all that, but we're going to get back into that, and we'll have to cover that on Monday. But we will get back into the exorcism. I just wanted to dry or run to ad nauseum all these points. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.